Welcome to the first edition of the Home Studio Craft Podcast. I'm Scott.
I'm Tippins.
And today we're going to be discussing how to get started. We kind of agree that that's the most difficult challenge for anybody who's just starting off with a home studio recording is where do you start, right?
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, for me, when I start a song, I usually write a song on acoustic guitar principally. And you know, at that point in time, I'll get the lyrics together, the melody, the chords, all that stuff, and figure out the arrangement. Right. I mean, I don't know, with your experience, is that pretty much the process for you as well?
As a guitarist, that's how I start writing my songs. My question would be, like, drummers, and you know, well, they need like a band and stuff, but
all the time.
Yeah,
because one of the drummer that I used to play with, my buddy Al, he's a, you know, songwriter, so he plays guitar. He actually used to have this little cool Casio keyboard.
Yeah.
That he used to write tunes on, and then, you know, he sang with it too. So he would do that, and you know, that's back in the day. So that was on like a TAC, I think it was a TAC 4-track that he used to do that. So yeah, so you know, I think a lot of drummers.
You can start with the drums, like if that's your primary. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just always wondered, like, if a drummer's brain is like thinking like that, like in terms of like songwriting.
Yeah. You know? I don't know. We have to ask the drummers.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
So anyway, like starting out, you know, it's just obviously you've got the song, you've written the song, and then, you know, what's the next step after that? I think the most important thing is to, you know, like consider the arrangement of the song. You know, is it verse, bridge, chorus, you know, verse, pre-chorus, chorus, verse. Yeah. Instrumental break, whatever, you know, figure out what the basic arrangement's going to be. And then, you know, record like a scratch track, right? Where it's either, you know, you're just playing, you know, keys and singing, or playing guitar and singing, and do that with a metronome. I actually like trying to, like, you know, put together a beat with a drum plug-in, you know, something that a little more inspiring than just having a click track. How about you? Like,
yeah, I'll start with, like, you know, the most basic drum track when I'm, you know, just getting my ideas to paper. You know, I'll try not to change the rhythm based on the drum track, you know, because it won't be permanent, obviously.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, I prefer to do that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just it's a little more inspiring than click, click.
You know, yeah, just, exactly.
Yeah, it's so sterile. So, and then after that, once you get that scratch track in there, and then you can start to, what I like to do is I like to look at the melody and then work a drum track kind of around the melody, right? So you have your kick and snare work in conjunction with how the melody flows.
Okay.
And then, you know, lay down like a basic groove on the verse, and then a basic groove on the chorus. And then after I have that, then I'll try to lock something in on the bass. Now, whether that's, you know, using like a synth bass on the keyboard,
yeah,
or, you know, using that Squire jazz bass over there to.
So how, like, tempo wise, how do you know really where to, like, start? Like, obviously, you know, if something's faster pace or slower pace,
right? But,
where, like, what's your tips for, like, finding the right tempo quickly?
That's a great question. I think most people have a feel for, you know, how the song should flow as far as, like, you know, the timing of it, just, you know, when you're creating the song itself.
Yeah.
But you know, it's, I try things a lot of times at different tempos to see what sounds better. You know, maybe if it's, yeah. I mean, sometimes like one or two beats per minute can, make a difference.
No, exactly. Right? Yeah, I've noticed that. Yeah.
And, you know, it's also too, it's like, if you've got a song and you record it and you go back and listen to it like a month later, it's like, man, it's just, it's kind of dragging.
Mm.
Right. And I've had that happen before, and it's like, do I want to go back and like re-record everything again?
Yes.
Right. But it's, it's true. It's like, get that, you know, get that tempo right. So yeah, that's one of the critical decisions. So
yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times just feel, and if it feels right, sounds right. So, and then, you know, play around with some different tempos and see, you know, see how it works.
Okay.
You know, and then after you've got the drum and bass groove, you know, for me, I usually go back in and re-record like the guitar parts, and make those, you know, better than what the initial scratch track was. Or, you know, if the initial scratch track sounds good, I'll just leave it and then maybe add to it, maybe layer in some other guitar parts, especially with electric guitar.
Yeah.
That actually brings up a good point too. So like at the beginning of a song, if you're working on the beginning of a song, do you usually have an idea of like instrumentation? Or
it depends. If I've had the idea for a while and just haven't gotten around to recording it yet, we'll have me and you know, my bandmate will have more of an idea of where it's going, obviously, if we've had it for longer.
But right.
A lot of times, you know, I'm recording just to not forget ideas and stuff.
And, right.
When we're in this phase.
Right.
So yeah, I'm getting a riff and a rhythm down really quickly. That's, you know, maybe a chorus or an inch or something like that.
And when you do that, are you recording into your DAW, or are you like just using like voice memos on your phone or something?
So yeah, I'll do, it depends if I'm at my computer. If I'm at my computer, I do my DAW, but yeah, a lot of times it is voice memos.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll do that a lot too. Just voice memos, because it's right there.
Yeah.
Right?
But then I stack them up and I, you know, I'll forget about them.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, when I initially come up with a song, like sometimes I'll have an idea of what it should sound like. Right. And then I actually go to record it and it just sounds awful. It's just like not at all. Like it's, I can't, you know, like the sound image in my head sounded great. But when I try to like, you know, convey that in the actual recording, it's just.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's everyone. Yeah. That's,
you know, just try to go back and like rework it. And, you know, that's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's like, what did Michelangelo say? It's like, you know, the sculptures inside that piece of marble just waiting to come out. That's kind of how I feel about like songs, right? They're there, but it's up to you to kind of, you know, bring them out to really how they're supposed to sound.
Yeah. And that's where obviously the production comes in. Like you'll, you know,
right.
Like you'll see an old clip of like, as they're making a song, and it'll sound like a completely different song before, you know, this one change comes in, and you can't imagine the song without that. So
did you ever see that, those videos of Steely Dan recording Asia at all?
I haven't. No,
it's crazy. They had the song, right. And they had the charts written for the songs, and they would have like a group of session musicians come in and play the song. And then they'd have an entirely different group of session musicians come in and play the same song. And so they had all these different versions of.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I wonder how much that cost them.
Yeah. Back in the day, it's like, yeah, they had big recording budgets. Yeah. Exactly.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. They were pretty extravagant.
So they had a bunch of different mixes of the same songs, like slightly different versions.
Yeah, like slightly different versions, or like bringing in different, you know, session guitar players to do like a solo. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of cool too, because you could hear like, I mean, these guys are like top pros, and like they were recording, I think, some of the solos for Peg. And the guy who ended up doing the solo was a guy named Jay Graydon, but they had other guys try to do the solo too. And they were just, I wouldn't say they were flubbing it, but you know, because you already have the version of the song in your head. You've already heard it so many times.
Yeah.
And these other guys would come in and just do the solo. It was just like, oh, just, just crap. It just, I mean, yeah, you know, I hate to say that, but it just did not sound fitting. And, you know, and Walter Becker and Donald Fagen were like, yeah, this guy was definitely like struggling. It just wasn't getting it. Yeah. And then this other guy, Jay Graydon, comes in and just like kills it the first time. So yeah. Anyway, what were we talking about? Instrumentation?
Yeah. Yeah. Knowing where you're going before you start. Like if,
right.
if,
like developing a solo.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we could all relate to, you know, loving a few solos.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were talking about
instrumentation.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it was like, as far as like the instrumentation goes, you know, sometimes like I'll have an idea in my head of what I want. And most times it comes out, you know, pretty right, like as far as like the ideas, but it's always kind of unveils itself as you're actually doing the recording process and the experimentation of what, you know, maybe the sound will sound cool. That's what I find myself spending the most time on, is like finding cool synthesizer sounds.
Yeah.
Be right. And then just tweaking those and then making all those different sounds like work together. That's, I really love doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get lost in some of those, you know, wave tables and stuff. And yeah.
It takes hours. I mean, for me anyway, sometimes, you know, you just happen upon a sound because that can, you know, make a song.
Yeah.
Right. Like you come into the chorus with like a really cool synth patch. It's like, wow, yeah. You know, it sounds awesome.
So are there any like, synth sounds in Ableton that you like stock, or are you like going, you know, mainly a bunch of plugins? Like,
yeah, I mean, I like all the Ableton's, you know, synth stuff. Like I use Operator a lot, and then I've been using Arturia's got a really cool, I forget the actual name of the plugin, but it's, they have a great synth plugin, just sounds amazing.
Yeah.
It's got some really, really cool sounds. Yeah, but I like a lot of like Ableton's like stock plugins and stuff. They're great.
Okay.
And yeah, and I like to mix and match like different patches, you know, have them like just duplicate the part with like, you know, a couple different synth patches just to get the like the layers and the different sounds. So yeah, so as far as like the instrumentation goes, it kind of, you know, it starts out with like drums, bass, guitars, you know, scratch vocal, and then it moves on to keyboards. You know, we usually like to have like a piano part in there, maybe some electric piano, and then, you know, different synth patches. And you pretty much have all the other instruments in there. And then it, for me, would be to go in, lay down the lead vocal tracks, and record a bunch of vocal tracks. You know, when you're, because, you know, singing for me, at least it's something new for me. And I really never sang my own songs until about 8 years ago. So that was something that I, you know, just wanted to learn. It was always like a point of frustration. So I, you know, it's not like you pick up a guitar or, you know, you're playing a keyboard. It's such a physical thing. You got to be feeling good, right? Well rested, not tired, you know, and, you know, ready to sing. And then once you're in that space, at least for me anyway, I try to record a bunch of different vocal takes and then just take those different ones, splice them up, and then make a compilation track from there.
So on like the final vocal, like let's say on a, like the first verse of a song, is it, you know, obviously each song has its own unique factors, but
sure.
Like, do you prefer like double tracking vocals no matter what on like, verses, or
usually never double track on a verse.
Okay.
Usually I'll do that on the choruses, just have a little more of a oomph, and then you know, come in with like some harmonies, or you know, at least do the like the double tracks just wide, so you get a nice wide stereo, you know, vocal mix. You know, and then it depends on the song too. Like, yeah, I don't think I've ever really done a double track on a verse.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's just me. So
like best practice wise, like on verse, obviously it's, there's no hard and fast rules, but like, sure. Majority of like, is that like standard or is that like a personal preference thing on like the single,
like double, like, double,
like
tracking?
Double tracking in general? Like,
you know, like, it's, yeah, I don't really think there's any like hard and fast rules, right?
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Like totally up to the, you know, who's, whoever the producer is, right?
Yeah.
Who's working at it. But you know, we're talking about home studio recording. So yeah. It's whatever you like, man. It's like, what, you know, if that sounds good to you,
yeah,
go for it.
Okay.
So like, just for me, I kind of like it. Just, you know, double tracking maybe is, you know, yeah, I would just say for, it's personal preference.
Like, yeah.
There's no real,
just gives like, you more of like a true lead vocal sound. Like,
yeah.
Without, that makes sense.
I mean, you know, you can, there's tons of tunes out there that are double tracked where throughout the entire song. Right. So it's not, you know, it's super common, mm-hmm. but I'm just saying for myself. So I would just say whatever okay. suits you, right. Whatever you like the most.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, you know, then, so after I've recorded a bunch of vocals, you know, obviously then we make the comp track and then, usually just go ahead and print that. So, you know, with any effects on it or without any effects, use auto-tune, right? So you print that with auto-tune. And then, you know, come in, lay down the harmonies, whatever, if there's any harmonies or like, you know, do the double track for the vocal, for the chorus vocals. And then that's pretty much it. Then just go in and do any like sweeteners you need to do, like any little cool guitar fills or little synth things to kind of make the song interesting so that the first chorus is slightly different from the second yeah. chorus and the third chorus or what have you. And the same thing with the verses. So you're always keeping the listener engaged.
Yeah.
And, for me, like one of the most fun parts of recording a song is coming up with a cool intro and a cool ending.
Yeah.
Right. So like how to make, you know, how to work on those two things. And then after that, you know, we didn't talk about like, you know, where to record. Right. So we're right now in my little home studio. But if you don't have a home studio, I think a really great place to record is in your bedroom.
Okay.
You know,
and what about the bedroom makes it ideal?
Well, you got a bed in there, right? So okay. It's like, you know, helps to absorb sound. You got yeah. pillows in there. You probably have curtains on your windows. You know, you've got a closet in there. So a closet is a great vocal booth, right? So you can just pop a mic stand in there. Run a cable under the door if it's a, you know, like if it's big enough, right?
Yeah.
Not all of them are, but even if it's not big enough, you can, you know, with those little, you know, small doors, you can go ahead and just like open those doors and stick your mic in there. So you're kind of like singing into the clothes, right? Mm. Or you got the mic and then you got your clothes behind you. So yeah, I think that's good.
Yeah. I've seen people do that. I didn't know.
Have you really?
That was, yeah. You'll yeah. see people do that on, you know, YouTube and stuff, but yeah. I didn't know if that was.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
You know, so yeah. So if you don't have a dedicated space, obviously, you know, time of day, right? So if you're recording vocals and you're using a condenser mic, like we're speaking into now, these are super sensitive. So if somebody's using a jackhammer, if you're living in an apartment and, you know, yeah. they're doing work on the street out front, it's probably not a good time to record vocals, right? Mm. So, yeah. you know, you got to take that into consideration. You know, if you're not in a house, you know, and you've got a guitar part that's, you know, you really want to crank your amp, right? So you got to think about that. Like what time of day is yeah. going to be good for that? If it's even possible, or use a plugin, right?
Yeah.
So those things as well.
What about like managing, I guess recording with headphones is the way to avoid all bleed over, I guess. Like, but like, what about like managing any, like what if you were, you know, trying to keep it loud? Maybe you're a little, I don't know, just like cut this
keep
part
it
out probably, but
that's all right.
Basically, like, cause I sometimes I'll, like just like keep my things on my, I'll like my amp and mic are so far away. I'll at least on like my first couple tracks that maybe aren't my serious recordings.
But, right.
Sometimes, you know, I just like I remember seeing Michael Jackson, like the takes from Michael Jackson's Beat It. Obviously that's the 80s.
Sure.
And there's like a lot of bleed over, I remember, in the takes, and it's just and that was like a professional, you know,
They were,
but that was a long time ago.
But they were recording live as a band in the studio?
I think so. So that's like the only time, like, you should always just, you know, record with headphones to avoid, probably, right?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it depends, right? If you're...
It's just you. Let's say it's just you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you're not gonna... Yeah, you would definitely be using... I mean, you mean like headphones as a... compared to like listening back on your monitors?
Yeah, like a little, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, just avoiding.
Yeah, you don't
want to. Stupid. I was trying to, I was looking for like a side topic.
It's all good.
But yeah,
we'll cut this one out.
Yeah, that was a bad one. It's like, what if you're being super lazy? Just,
what if you don't want to get up and go over to your amp? Oh, yeah, I hope my mic wasn't too loud. Sorry. No, it's me. I was like, look at my...
But yeah,
it's going red.
Yeah, what if you don't want to plug your headphones in?
Right, right. Yeah, so if you don't have a dedicated space to record, you know, I would suggest the bedroom. That's probably one of the best rooms in the house that you can use. And also, too, is, you know, if you're just getting started, you don't need a ton of equipment. You can use, you know, not that I'm promoting any particular interface, but you can go out and buy, you know, a 2-input Focusrite Scarlett interface. It comes with a free version of Ableton. Get yourself a mic, you know, get like a, you know, Shure SM57, or, you know, if you're recording vocals, I would definitely recommend you get like a budget, you know, condenser microphone. And, you know, if you're recording guitars, you know, pick up an SM57 also, and you can use that to record guitars. And get yourself a set of decent headphones. And, you know, maybe like a little USB keyboard. So you can do all this. You can get all that equipment for under $500, you know, instead of get closed back headphones too. So you can, so because when you're tracking your vocals, you don't want the bleed coming from an open set of open back headphones. Mm. You can avoid that. And, yeah, so like, you know, for $500, you can get in and start recording. Don't let money be, you know, the block, that the pain point that keeps you from starting to record.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. When I was starting out, that's something I thought was just, you know, this is going to cost me, you know, $5,000. You know,
it can definitely easily cost
that,
right?
But yeah, it could. But yeah,
I have a buddy of mine. He just spent $30,000 on some Osberger monitors.
Wow.
Just monitors.
Like a professional, or is he?
He is, yeah, he is definitely a professional, audio engineer. So he's got a ton of gear. Yeah. Yeah. He's got a ton of gear. And, yeah. So it's, I mean, you can spend tons of money, right? But, but you know what? There's guys, the guy's name is slipping my mind now, but he literally recorded an album with his phone using GarageBand.
Wow.
And it sounded great.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he got the performances. His guitar sounded really cool. It was good. I'll remember his name for the next podcast.
Well, like Jack White uses those, you know, crappy $100, like Amazon guitars and stuff.
Yeah.
And like a $30 pedal.
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
Yeah. Yeah, that would definitely bother me, though.
Yeah.
I hate shitty guitars.
Yeah, he seems, he's taking it a little too far with that
one. But, you know, there was that video he did with Jimmy Page, and the Edge. See that?
Yeah.
But he takes that, like, nails it into that piece of wood, and then just takes that piece of wire, and then he just, you know, hooks up that pickup and starts playing. It was awesome. And I love that, like, DIY, you know, ethos where you just get out and just, you know, you don't need to go out and spend $3,000 on a Les Paul. They're like, this is my slide guitar.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, yeah.
Right.
But, yeah. I see people, you know, there's guys on YouTube who gig squires, you know,
yeah, man,
around the country.
And they kill it, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, don't let expensive gear be the pain point. All right. Well, I think that concludes the first episode of the Home Studio Craft Podcast. You good, Tippins?
I'm good.
All right. Thanks. Catch you next time.